Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have you here as always. Now, I'm not sure if you've ever been to meetings and had the thought while you're there, what is the purpose of this meeting? What am I doing here? There's so many things I could be doing other than sitting in this meeting. I know I certainly have had those thoughts and feelings over the years. I've been to many a meeting that was just a bit droll. So my guest today, Mamie Camphor-Stewart, is going to be talking about how to have meetings that actually work. We're going to be talking about the different kinds of meetings, making sure the meetings have a purpose and we're not just meeting because someone told us to. We're going to be talking about how to facilitate, how to really get the most out of people so that we're tapping into the wisdom of the team. So it's a really interesting conversation. It's a really practical conversation. And for anyone who's ever wondered whether or not meetings are worthwhile, or indeed if they've ever wondered, can their meetings be more effective, more productive, and more outcome focused, then this is going to be a conversation that you're going to enjoy. As I said, it's very practical, it's quite tactical, and there's a lot of things in this conversation that you're going to be able to apply from the get-go. So have a pen handy, have some notepaper handy, and I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Mamie Camphor-Stewart. Mamie, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang with us on the Savvy Dentist Podcast. You're coming to us all the way from Brooklyn in New York. How's things on the other side of the world?
Very cold and very snowy right now.
I bet. And we are recording this in coronavirus time, so our thoughts are with all of our overseas friends. We hope you're coming through that pretty well.
Thank you. I'm so jealous that I'm not where you are, where coronavirus has all but disappeared.
We've had a very different experience, that's for sure. We're very lucky. And over my shoulder there, you can see it's sunny. And so we're obviously in summer, you're in winter, so we'll try and keep you warm and keep you going. So that'll be good. Mamie, you've got a lot of experience in the entrepreneurial space. You work with lots of different leaders, lots of different businesses, but you're well known for a couple of things. Particularly, you're really well known about how to have productive meetings and to get outcomes from that. And I thought what I'd like to start our conversation with today, just by way of introduction, is how you found your way into that work. What was the problem that you observed? What was the entry point into that? Because very rarely do people go through high school or university or college in the United States and say, I think it's meetings. I think I'm going to make my career around that or other forms of productivity and so on. So what was it that led you to that space?
Yeah, it's a long and winding story, but I'll make it a short one.
Okay.
Which is, I grew up in a family business. So you might be familiar with Purell hand sanitizer. That product is the kind of star of my family business. My grandfather started the company, my father became his partner, and now my sister is running the business. And I, you know, shortly after college, I got my first job kind of working alongside some of our colleagues in the business and learned how meetings should be run and learned what an effective meeting was there. And then when I left and went out into the real world, meetings were awful. And I was like, what is happening here? Like, I thought that how meetings were run at our company at Gojo were how meetings were run everywhere. And when I learned that that was not the case, I thought, oh my gosh, this is a big problem. And when I started to talk to people about their meetings, it was like, everyone has this problem. This wasn't unique to companies with thousands of employees. This wasn't unique to small business owners. This was happening up and down inside every different kind of organization you can imagine. People were struggling with their meetings, and I felt like I had something that I could do about it.
It's really interesting, isn't it? Because I've certainly sat through my share of horrible meetings. I spent my early career as a dentist in the Navy, and it was death by meeting, and it was excruciating. I want to ask, why do you think meetings have become excruciating? How did we get to that point?
You know, I don't know if meetings were ever really well done, but I think that one of the challenges is that we all have meetings all the time. We think it's something that we should naturally be able to do because gathering as humans is a natural thing. Yet we don't actually spend any time learning how to do that well. And at the same time, because we think it should be obvious, we don't want to admit to ourselves that we're maybe not so good at it. And I see this happen all the time when I talk with managers and entrepreneurs about meetings and they say, oh yes, so-and-so's meetings are terrible. But they never say, oh, my meetings are terrible. But if I asked all their colleagues, they would say, oh yeah, Mamie, when she leads meetings, sometimes they're not so good. But we all just think that we should know how to do it. And we don't want to admit when we're not so good at it.
It's really interesting because like all of us, I think my meetings rock totally. You know, they're awesome every day, of course, right? No worries. But I'm sure that my team members would probably say there's room for improvement there as well. But you've had the good fortune of experiencing a great meeting. Obviously, in the family business, you got to experience meetings done well. And then you got to have that corollary experience where meetings were not done so well. I'd like to ask you, when you're in the family business and the meetings were done really well, how did that feel? What was the outcome? What does a good meeting deliver? Why was it so integral to the success of your family business?
Yeah, I think it's the same in any kind of good collaboration experience where you leave feeling more energized, more excited about whatever that conversation was and where it's leading. The outcomes are really clear. It wasn't just a good conversation, but you know what the next steps are. You came to some conclusion, some closure that whether it's a decision that was made or just alignment and clarity on the ideas that you were discussing together, but there feels like it was a good use of your time and you can now move forward. And I think we all know what the opposite of that feels like when you're in a conversation and maybe it was a great conversation, really interesting, but 5 seconds later, you're like, okay, so now what am I supposed to do about this? Mm-hmm. And it's super unclear if you're supposed to take a certain action or what exactly the decision was, or kind of, are you supposed to have another meeting? Did you figure this all out? Or do we need to have another discussion about it? Because we had some interesting points made, but we didn't necessarily get any closure on it. So good meetings, I remember sitting in some and walking out and just being like, I'm so excited now to go do the work because that conversation led me to be able to do something new, to move forward in my role or in the project or in whatever ways that I was looking for.
It's a really interesting thing, isn't it? Because I think intuitively we understand that we should have an outcome from a meeting. We should, you know that what the next steps are. What's really interesting in dentistry as well is even when people do get that clarity, sometimes perhaps we're going to advance a particular project or whatever it is, you know, as a result of that meeting. One of the things that we hear time and again is they come back for the next meeting and no progress has been made on those activities that were agreed upon last time. And part of that is because the scheduling around that hasn't facilitated work to be done on that. Everyone's just gone back to doing dentistry, seeing patients and caught up in the delivery and so on and so forth. Is that a common situation in small to medium businesses that you see?
Absolutely. There's two problems that come out of this. The first is we have arbitrary meeting dates. We say, okay, we're going to meet every other Tuesday at 3 o'clock. And there's 2 weeks between, but that 2 weeks may or may not be the right amount of time to get all of those activities done. Maybe it's way too much time and you really should be compressing it, or maybe it's not nearly enough time and you need to extend it out. But we just have said for ease of scheduling, we're going to do it every other week at Tuesdays at 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. The second problem is that we think about meetings as an event and we show up and we have the conversation and then we're done. And really, meetings are part of a cycle where there's what you do before the meeting to get ready. There's the conversation itself during the meeting. And then there's the follow through. And when a meeting ends, you have to now take whatever came out of it and integrate it into your workflow. So whether those are action items that need to end up on your work plan or your to-do list, whether it's people that need to be informed because you had a conversation that impacts their work. And so now that information needs to get to those people. But there's always a follow-through component and no one ever thinks about this. I mean, I never thought about this either, actually. Even working alongside colleagues at Gojo before, it never occurred to me that this was like part of the meeting. The meeting didn't just end because we hung up the call or we walked out of the room. There was actually work that had to be done to follow through on that meeting and prepare us for the next.
It's a really good point that you make there about it's not an event, it's a process. And I guess it's part of an overall productivity system in a sense. And I guess if we're just trying to get granular for a moment, because our audience are fairly detail-oriented sorts of guys and girls, and I guess to make that really practical, what I'm hearing is we want to prepare for the meeting, so we want to make sure that we're going into the meeting with either updates or reports on progress, et cetera, of things that we've been doing previously. We've got a good structure for that meeting. We know who's going to be leading the conversation, keeping on track, et cetera. But on a practical level, at the end of that meeting, we're going to need to allow some time, potentially at least for some people, to have implementation time and time to do things. Because what I know happens in a dental practice, everyone goes, yeah, I'll just fit that in and around the million other things that need to be done. The phone's ringing. There's a patient at the front desk. This has happened or that's happened. And then, of course, things don't happen. And it's then you go back the following Tuesday or every second Tuesday and you kind of go, well, what progress did it make? Not a lot.
Yes, that is exactly right, that it's part of a productivity system. But also, there's no consequences when we don't get something done, right? And I see this all the time. And I mean, I'm a meeting expert, you might say. I wrote a book on meetings. And still, when I come out of certain meetings and I have things on my to-do list and I look at them and I go, if I don't get that done this week, it's not really the end of the world. And so I don't do it. I prioritize something else because we're all working at extreme capacities right now.
Yes.
And then there's no consequences, right? We do the things that we need to get done because there's some consequence if we don't. And the things that have no consequences always fall to the bottom. So there's an overall kind of productivity capacity question that we have to figure out for ourselves and our teams. And then there's the, is it even making it to your to-do list to begin with? Are we getting it from, we had a conversation in a meeting to, I am going to get this piece of work done. And the tricky thing about that, especially for small business owners that I see, is we tend to have a lot of ideas. And I speak as a small business owner myself. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of ideas. When we talk about stuff in meetings, I mean, I was in a meeting last week or so, and there must have been three or four ideas of things that we could do. And they were all really exciting. And yes, we could change our Instagram plan and we could do this and that. And at the end of the meeting, if we aren't clear about which things we do want to do and which things are just good ideas that maybe we're going to hold on to for another time, it's hard for our colleagues to know which things to take action on. And nobody wants to waste their time doing something they shouldn't do.
Exactly.
And nobody wants to, you know, be responsible for things. And just, you know, very few people are like, I'll just take on all of these things. I'll just volunteer for a bunch of work that I'm not even sure my boss really wants me to do or not. So we have to be really clear what those actions are. And then we have to make sure we know who is going to be responsible for them and when they're due and what the consequences are if we don't move forward on it.
Yeah. So fantastic. So do you have a process where you might triage those actions? Do you have some sort of filtering process around that where maybe you're filtering around impact, maybe you're filtering around ease? What sort of filtering process do you go through personally in your business to determine what projects make the cut and which ones don't?
Well, I would say there's basically two different conversations we're having here. So one is like the real detailed inside the meeting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So here at the end of the meeting, I recommend teams do a wrap up. You save mm-hmm. the last 5 minutes for a meeting, for mm-hmm. every meeting, you put it on the agenda. The last 5 minutes, you're going to recap what decisions were made, what the next steps are, and who is going to do those by when, and any key takeaways, any key critical information that other people are going to need to know about, or you're going to want to remember for the future, and you type it up right then and there. You put it directly either into an email or whatever kind of software you're using to capture your notes or capture your next steps. You want it automatically documented right then and there, not in someone's notebook, because we'll never see it again.
Yep.
So the first step is when you go through that wrap up, the whole group together gets to agree again, yes, this is the decision we officially made. There's no confusion about what that decision is. There's also no question about what the next steps are because you've collectively agreed these are the next steps and who's going to take them. So that's a good time for the team to decide together which actions are going to move forward and which ones were just ideas that came up that aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, fantastic. Mamie, I want to just shift gears for a second as we think about a few of these things, because obviously there's meetings and there's meetings, there's the regular team meeting, and then you might have a planning meeting, and then you might have, you know, a variety of other kinds of meetings. In your world, what types of meetings do you see, and what meetings do you think are most relevant for small businesses?
Oh, that's a really tough question.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, partially because I don't subscribe to a meeting system that is particular to a size of business or a type of business or a
thank you. Yeah. It's scale. Not a one size fits all, is it?
It's not a one size fits all. And the way that I think about meetings is there are a number of different reasons to have a meeting. And the first thing you do is get clear about why are we having this meeting and what do we want to accomplish in it? And that might mean that we're going to have meetings that are on decisions. We're going to have meetings that are for brainstorming and ideation. We're going to have meetings to learn together. We're going to have meetings to make sense of complicated information and just get aligned on what the situation is. We're going to have meetings to plan. But that doesn't mean that we need to have a weekly team meeting, right? That's a kind of meeting, but that doesn't really tell you what that meeting's all about. Is that meeting for relationship building? Is that meeting for aligning on work streams? Is that meeting for decision-making? I don't know. We have a weekly team meeting. So there's lots of different kinds of meetings. You can have problem-solving meetings. You can have whatever it might be. But the label you give it isn't what's so important. What matters is figuring out why are we gathering and what are we going to accomplish when we're spending our time together?
I think that goes to the heart of where a lot of the objections around meetings come up, doesn't it? Because people feel like they've got to have a weekly team meeting or a fortnightly team meeting, but the objective hasn't really been clearly articulated ahead of time. And so I wonder if that's at the cause of some people's resistance to having the meeting in the first place.
Yeah. And I'll tell you a great story about this one because this was one of my clients and it was such an aha moment for them. So they were having a monthly gathering of their team. It was about seven people. And it was like their time to get together and go through all the work streams. And they all hated it. None of their work really was interrelated. They were all running different parts of the business. Mm. It didn't really make sense that they were sharing this information with each other because the only person who really needed to know all of it was the CEO. And he pretty much knew most of it anyways because he was in constant relationship with all of them throughout the week. So they had this monthly, 90-minute, whatever it was, meeting that didn't really make sense. And we had a whole conversation. We went through a training around effective meetings and why have a meeting. And they changed their monthly meeting to a 5 p.m. end of the day, and they called it family reunion. And they said, this is our time where we get together to just hang out and be friendly with each other. And they order pizza and they get to know each other and just see what's going on in each other's lives. Because all they really wanted out of that time together was a chance to be in relationship with each other because they were working almost in silos the rest of the month. And it was just nice to know who the person who's sitting in the office next door to me, because we're all part of the same company, even though we don't really interact very much. And that shift made such a difference to their culture and to their engagement. And it's those kinds of things of getting into the heart of it, as you're saying, about why are we really spending this time together? What are we really here to accomplish? And now you can really transform your whole culture when you know how to use your meetings to do that.
I think that's a really good aha moment. And for anyone listening to the show, I'd really encourage you to just to go back and listen to the last minute or so of what Mamie was talking about there. Really understanding the purpose of that meeting is key. And really, meetings for the sake of meetings, well, it's a bit of a waste of time. And one of the other problems that I see a lot that comes up with meetings, and I've certainly been guilty of it too, so two hands in the air for me, but meetings where the business leader or the business owner kind of dominates the airspace, and it can feel like if you're a team member that you're being spoken at or to, and it's not a conversation. Again, is that something that you see commonly as well?
It is. And I'll first say that the way that I discovered this practice was actually in a very similar way to being in my family business and then coming out into other spaces where I observed that in meetings, my dad was almost always the last to talk because whatever it was that he said was going to be the thing that went. Even though we have a culture in our company that, everyone's voice matters. We really value disagreement and constructive conflict. We really believe in all of that. But still, whenever you have hierarchy, you're going to have power differentials. And especially when you have a founder, that person's voice is going to be seen as more valuable and more important, even if they don't want it to be. So recognizing that is critical. Someone once described it to me as, imagine as the CEO, everything you say, you're standing on a table looking down at your colleagues. So that experience of looking up and hearing your boss say something to you, especially the founder, who's the most important person here, this company is their baby. Everything that you're saying is as if they're your parent, or, you know, they're a giant looking down on you as this little person who's just there. So getting that kind of mental image into your head is kind of the first place to start, which is your voice, even if you say a million times, my voice is no more important than anyone else's, my opinion is no more important than everyone else's, I really want this to be collaborative, people are going to hear you differently. They're going to see you differently because of your role. The second part of it, though, is that speaking last is really important, right? I saw my dad do this. I see my sister do it in meetings now. Giving space and allowing other people to speak first and making that part of your practice. So everyone just starts to know that you're not going to talk first, which is our instinct often because we want to jump right in. So holding back and giving space for everyone to talk first. And at the end, summing up, what did you hear? And then what's your opinion? Then where are you at? After kind of listening to everyone, kind of reflecting it back and then saying, and now this is what I'm going to add to it. And many times you'll find that most of your colleagues will say things that you were already thinking. And so instead of you having to take credit for that, you can give them credit, which makes them feel really good and want to share more. And for the people that you disagree with, you're giving them a sense of respect by showing that you heard what they said, but you have a different interpretation, or you have a different perspective, or here's your reasoning why you're not going to go in that direction.
And this is the constructive disagreement. And I think the key word there is the constructive part as well. So I really, really appreciate that. And I think on that note, where you've got the founder or the leader of the business, in your case, your father and now your sister speaking last and drawing out from the rest of the team, oftentimes there's a wallflower somewhere in there, maybe introverted, or maybe they don't feel like their opinion matters, etc. And of course, we try and encourage them out and ask them directly about what's on their mind and what views they might have around this. Is there anything else that the people running the meeting can do to try and encourage that person to speak rather than just directly asking them? Is there more to drawing them out than that?
Absolutely. I mean, facilitation is a skill set. So it doesn't all come natural to everyone to be able to create that kind of environment where everyone feels safe to facilitate people, to draw things out of them, to know what kind of activities to use. Like, there's a whole field of meeting facilitation for a reason, because it's not easy. And it's doubly not easy when you're trying to keep everyone on time, follow an agenda, like go through all of those different roles that you have to play, take notes, right? All of those things. So the first thing I would say is, if there's someone on your team who is particularly skilled at this, or who you feel like could grow into this kind of facilitation role, to ask them to help you out. Because we don't have to be the ones to do everything. I'd say you don't have to be a meeting hero. Good meeting leaders know how to use the skill set of the people in the room. And so if there's someone else who can help draw other people out, who can ask really good questions, who can recognize and notice when someone's not talking and say, hey, no, I realize we haven't heard from Mamie at all. Mamie, I'm wondering what you're thinking right now, right? Then rely on other people, encourage them and ask them to help you. The second thing is to be super clear that you value every single person's opinion and that you want them to engage, creating that sense of psychological safety and letting them know that you really do want to hear what they have to say. If people don't feel safe, they're not going to speak up no matter how many times you ask, or they'll say something, but it's not what they're really thinking, which doesn't really help us. So we need to cultivate a sense of psychological safety where people can speak up when they're asked, or they can jump in when they're ready. And they know that they are not going to be immediately shut down for their perspective, especially if it's a dissenting perspective. And then the last thing I'll say is, you don't have to have it all spoken out loud. There is value to having things shared anonymously. Sometimes, especially if you feel like you're already in a position where you're working in a deficit, where people don't speak up or they're too nervous, and when you do ask them a question, they don't seem to really tell you the whole truth. Using different kinds of tools, either before the meeting or during the meeting, can help get all of that information on the page. So whether it's a Google document or some other kind of anonymous document where people can go in and no one will know who typed what, It could be polling. There are plenty of new polling tools, whether it's through Zoom or other kinds of tools, or we're all working virtually. But getting people to share their ideas anonymously is a great way to get information into the room, get perspectives into the room, that now you can have a conversation and it doesn't matter who said what, because the information's there. And so you can all process it together.
Yeah. Mamie, you touched on the role of the facilitator and what a unique skill set that is. And thank you for giving me that segue, because that's something I'd like to just pick up and run with for a moment, because it seems like a skill set that not many people would necessarily assume that you have to go and learn about. But what I'm hearing you say is that is a particular skill set. There is an art and a science to it. And investing time to learn how to do that is obviously a useful thing. And I know you've got your website, meteor.com, and there's a ton of resources there. So it's meteor.com. What sort of things, if someone was interested in becoming a better facilitator in meetings, what sort of things might they look at? What sort of things might they need to think about as they go on that journey?
Ooh, all right. Well,
big one. Sorry.
So many things, right? Because it depends on what you're challenged by and what comes most natural to you. So here are some of the tips that I would suggest. The first is to make yourself some sticky notes, or if you're in a room with people, having it on a piece of paper in front of you, things that will trigger your brain to remind you to facilitate. So those notes might say something like, did everyone talk? So that when you're having the conversation and your eyes flip down to that paper or onto the sticky note and you see, did everyone talk, you pause for a second in your brain and you say, have we heard from everyone in this room? And if not, you can ask for people to speak who haven't spoken yet, right? Even saying something as simple as, I want to hear from people who haven't yet shared, right? Opening the floor up, those kinds of things, right? Then it gets into other things like when there's one person who's hogging the mic. And I actually was in a meeting earlier this week where one person was going on and on, and it feels a little difficult to interrupt them. It doesn't feel as difficult when you're the boss. Sometimes a little easier, but not always, right? Sometimes it's a little awkward to interrupt somebody who's talking on and on and on. And there are ways that we can interrupt people that are a little bit easier, right? So using questions. I love questions because they don't sound aggressive. They kind of just break the train of thought. So I'll give you an example. So in this meeting, this person was going on and on, and I was facilitating. And so I kindly interrupted him by saying, I'm sorry, Jim, I'm just wondering if what you're talking about is the most important thing for this conversation, because we only have about 15 minutes left and I want to make sure that we get through our agenda. And so rather than saying, Jim, I think what you're talking about isn't relevant, which doesn't sound very good, I said, I'm wondering if this is really important for us right now. And that kind of opening allowed him to say, okay, we can take this offline. And, you know, sorry for going off on that tangent. Yep. And we were able to get back on track. So questions are a good way to kind of reorient a conversation or to interrupt someone kindly, giving yourself those visual sticky notes to remind yourself, you know, are we going off on tangents? Is, you know, has everyone spoken? Are we staying on time? Are we staying on track? And giving yourself those triggers, because for most of us, the art of facilitation actually comes down to us remembering to facilitate.
That's really interesting, because I have the opportunity to facilitate some meetings, and sometimes I find myself getting caught up in the content of the meeting and having to step back myself and go, oh, hang on, I'm in a facilitator role. I'm not necessarily as a participant. I've just got to remember that other role. So it's really, I'm glad you raised it, because I find myself forgetting that I have that role sometimes.
Exactly. That's the hardest part. It's really hard to do so many things. It's hard to be a participant yourself, to facilitate engagement by others, to keep the agenda on track, to make sure you're moving on time, to take notes, right? We're just doing too many things and we can't do them all well. And so that's why I started by saying, if you can empower other people on your team to take on some of those roles, that will not only make your job much easier, but also make other people more engaged, right? It's helpful for other people to feel like they're needed and to have a role to play besides just sharing their perspective.
Yeah. Now, we're recording this at a time early 2021, February. And of course, over the last 6 or 8 months, we've all experienced Zoom meetings to the nth degree. And I think one of the gifts, if we can talk about a gift from COVID, because I know, again, I feel awkward saying that given our limited experience of COVID compared to other countries, But if there is a gift, it's allowed us to do a lot more online than perhaps we might otherwise have done. It's kind of pushed us into that space. But I'm also aware that there's been a bit of a death by Zoom meeting concept that's been thrown around a little bit as well. So I wanted to just talk a little bit about virtual meetings and what you see as the key differences and how to make a Zoom meeting or an online or a virtual meeting really effective, things that you might need to consider that you don't need to consider in a live in-person experience.
Sure. Well, the first thing is that not everything needs to be a Zoom meeting.
No.
We got really excited about Zoom when we all first got online, like, oh, this is so great. I can see your face and I can read your body language. And then by the end of the day, it's like, oh my gosh, I cannot stare at myself on screen for another minute. And first of all, we're also not used to seeing ourselves, which is super awkward. Mm-hmm. So definitely turn off your self view. That's the number one tip, is go in and turn your own, leave your camera on, but turn off the self view so you're not looking at yourself, because that's just super awkward. Second is to remember that not everything does have to have video on. I love walking meetings where I put my headphones in and I go for a walk, even in the snow, because it's snowing here, but just moving my body and getting outside and being on the phone is perfectly fine when you're talking to one or two people, especially if it's a small meeting with people you know well. And there's no reason you need to look at everyone's face. There's no reason you have something in front of you on the screen. If you have a document, sure, you're looking at a shared document. But if you're just having a conversation with one or two colleagues, make it a walking meeting, or at least put videos off so that people don't have to be on. We have to be on in a different way when we've got our video on. So those are kind of two starting points. Then when it comes to just generally making virtual meetings more effective, the crappy part about virtual meetings versus in-person meetings is when we're in person, we get the joy of being together. We get to feed off each other's energy. We get a break from sitting at our desk. We got to move our body to go to the meeting room. Sometimes there's even food, right? There's all kinds of good things that come when we're physically present with other people. And we've all experienced that Zoom does not recreate that. For as great as it is to see each other, it's not the same thing. And so you want your Zoom meetings, therefore, to be even more efficient in a way that doesn't let go of the relational stuff, right? Sometimes you even have to lean into the relational stuff and spend the first 5 or 10 minutes just chatting with people and getting caught up because we don't have the water cooler time. But then be really efficient and use different kinds of online tools to make your meeting efficient so that you don't have to spend 3 hours on Zoom. You could get it done in an hour. You don't have to spend an hour. You could get it done in 45 minutes, because people don't want to spend more time in meetings than they have to.
I think you're absolutely right on that last point, particularly. I think, you know, meetings, once they're done, I think people are happy to get back to the day. But I really appreciate the fact that you've spoken about turning your camera off or having the walking meeting and not assuming it has to be a certain way. You get to create the meeting in a way that makes sense for you. And if that's a walking meeting and that sort of gives you energy and helps you move and all those other sorts of things, then just write your own rules and do what you like, really.
Yeah. And you don't even need to have a meeting all the time. Like, that's the other thing, is when you get down to the core of why are we gathering, sometimes you'll realize that there's a better method or a better mode than having a meeting. And I found this with my team, where we used to have a weekly meeting where we get together and we go through, what are you getting done this week? What are you planning to do this week? All that stuff. And we switched it to a daily Slack message. And so instead of getting together for an hour each week, we all went on at 9 a.m. and put into our Slack channel, this is what I'm working on today. This is like my number one priority. This is what I accomplished yesterday. And this is what help I need from my colleagues. And by 9:30, you could go through and skim what everyone had written. You could see if somebody needed help from you. So you knew to follow up with them to be able to provide that support. But suddenly we didn't even need to have a weekly meeting. We could just do it in Slack in literally 5 minutes. So much better. So you don't have to have a meeting all the time to get your work done.
Absolutely. Love Slack. One of my favorite tools on the whole planet is Slack, actually. It's fantastic. So for those people in dentistry who have not used Slack before, check it out. It's really cool. Mamie, you've been really, really generous with your time. And I'm really conscious. I'm looking over your shoulder because we are doing this as a video meeting, but we're only recording the audio. But I'm noticing the sun is setting further and further and it's getting to nighttime there. So thank you so much for giving up your afternoon and evening to come and talk to us. It's really great to talk to you because what I've taken away from this is A, know the purpose. Why are you meeting in the first place? Get what you need to get done by being clear about your purpose. Construct the meeting in a format that suits you and works for you. Not everything has to be a meeting, as you've said. Making sure there's clear outcomes. And if you're the leader of the meeting, making sure that you're speaking last and encouraging other people. And that facilitation point, so, so really powerful and really important. So some absolute pearls of wisdom there. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And that was a fantastic recap. I'm so impressed.
Thank you. I was listening. I really was. Now, ladies and gents, if you want to hear more from Mamie, I would really encourage you to go and check out her stuff. There's a treasure trove of goodies there. You can head across to themodernmanager.com. You can head across to mamieks.com. So mamieks.com. And I've already mentioned the meteor.com website. So meteior.com. Tons of resources on all of those sites. Go check them out because there's going to be something there that's going to help you take your meetings, your productivity, and indeed your collaboration with your team to a whole nother level. So some wonderful resources there from Mamie. And also check out her podcast. And as a fellow podcaster, I appreciate another good podcast. And I would really commend Mamie's podcast to you as well. So thank you, Mamie. You're an absolute gem.
Thank you so much. This is such a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.